May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer.
Amen.
Question which I think all of us should be asking and addressing. That question is, what is the role of churches, of local faith communities, within the context of the current political landscape in our country? Focusing particularly on local faith communities like this one, like the community of St. Andrews. And one answer to that question that I want to hold up for you today is that our role is to be a community. To be a community. That may go without saying, but it needs to be said. It is not the only role of faith communities by any means, but it is a very important one, and I think often underappreciated. To be a real community, a community of relatedness and caring. Several things have raised this question for me at this particular time. The question itself was explicitly raised at an interfaith forum that I attended a week or two ago, and across the spectrum of that interfaith landscape, people were asking this question, what is our role? And of course, this week, the reaction to the president's alleged remarks, widely publicized alleged remarks, the reaction to those remarks indicate once again the extreme polarization that characterizes our current political landscape and the viciousness with which many people react rather than reflect. It seems to me that in large sense we have lost a sense of common good, a sense of being related one to another. And a flesh and blood community, a community that comes together face to face, a community that values relatedness, is a powerful witness and antidote to the current situation. A flesh and blood community of caring that comes together face to face and that values relatedness is a powerful witness in today's world. But to be that sort of a community, to be a true community, not just a collection of people, but to be a true community takes commitment and it takes work. And it's not always a convenient piece of our lives. There was a recent editorial written by Peter Marty that appeared in the Christian Century. He is the son of Martin Marty, if you know that name, but he is a Lutheran pastor in Ireland somewhere, I think. And he wrote, "I have decided that making Sabbath worship an integral part of one's life, coming together as a community for worship, is highly inconvenient. For those who stay away from communal worship, because Sunday is the day to arrange personal leisure, take special care of oneself, or get the kids off to soccer, making time for church is just plain inconvenient within the scheduling complexities of modern life." But he continues, "For those of us who do make church a priority, Sabbath worship is equally inconvenient, though in a different way. We sing songs we didn't pick, hear scriptures we didn't choose, commit to endeavors for which we must sacrifice, and, here's the worst, although I'm sure it isn't true at St. Andrew's, sit next to people who aren't even our closest friends. In our world of customized living, where a mobile device can effortlessly order up my preferences and bring most things to my doorstep, church is simply inconvenient. Church pulls me away from my self-designated life and requires that I take some initiative in another world that has nothing in common with doing whatever I please. What a valuable witness that sort of community can be. I've been thinking about community and church as community also because, starting this week and for the next few weeks, we're going to be reading, as our epistle reading, from Paul's first letter to the Corinthians, speaking of scriptures which I did not choose. But Paul has some very important things to say about community in this first letter to the Corinthians. That's really what it's all about, this letter. Quoting for you from a commentator, writing about 1 Corinthians, writing about Paul's letter to these new young Christians in Corinth. This commentator writes, "I count 15 distinguishable problems that Paul addresses in 1 Corinthians, problems within the community of Christians in Corinth. They are partisanship, with the Christians factionalizing behind rival leaders, incest, prostitution, hence this morning's edifying reading, celibacy within marriage, Christians married to one another asking about divorce, Christians married to pagans asking about divorce, questions in general surrounding marriage and remarriage, lawsuits, idolatry, concerns about women praying and prophesying in immodest ways, chaos in worship with speaking in tongues and competing voices, inequality in the communal meal, denials of the bodily resurrection, the collection of a large sum of money to be sent elsewhere to other people in Jerusalem, and a change in Paul's travel plans. Some of those may seem significant to us, some less so. But ours is not the first time in which society has been fraught and divided. And these concerns, most of them at least, were of deep concern to the community in Corinth and a source of significant division. The commentator continues, underlying all of this mess in Corinth, there were four main difficulties. A basic failure in relating to one another in love. A dramatic failure of the local church leaders to act considerately in the face of their competition for status and influence. Arrogant theological reasoning, and tensions arising from the pressures that Paul's teaching about sex placed on his converts. Each of these problems would have been bad enough, but when they were all present together, the combination was toxic. In that 10-year-old Christian community. The commentator continues, when we take a step back from all of the ins and outs of the particular issues of this letter, we can see that Paul is arguing something simple to the Corinthians. A great deal of what he says can be summed up in the phrase, appropriate relating. One of the letter's high points, one of the high points of 1 Corinthians, comes in chapters 12 and 13, which we're not actually going to get to. Chapter 13 describes at length the principal Christian way of relating, which is with love. And of course, the word that Paul uses for love is agape, that Greek word for which there isn't really a very good English translation. Agape love, charity towards one another, well-wishing towards one another. As I'm quoting others today, I want to share with you a couple of quotes by others on the nature of agape, because that's what Paul is teaching that young Christian community, to be a community that embodies agape. First, on this weekend in which our country remembers the work and ministry of Martin Luther King Jr., I quote him on agape. King wrote, "Agape does not begin by discriminating between worthy and unworthy people. It begins by loving others, all others, for their sakes, and makes no distinction between a friend and enemy. Agape is directed toward both. Agape is love seeking to preserve and create community. Agape is defined as love that seeks to preserve and create community." And King is very clear that agape is directed towards segregationists as well as those who have been segregated. Makes no distinction between friend and enemy. It is directed towards both. Agape is love always seeking to preserve and create community, relatedness, common good. King continues, "Love," this is a well-known quote, "love is creative and redemptive. Love builds up and unites. Hate tears down and destroys. The aftermath of love is reconciliation and the creation of the beloved community." Secondly, I want to quote someone who may at first seem to be very different as a person, and yet who worked for much the same thing. A name probably less familiar to you, perhaps unknown to most or all of you, Christer Stendahl. He also, in his life and ministry, worked very hard to break down boundaries. Christer Stendahl died about 10 years ago. He came originally out of the Swedish Lutheran tradition. He was a pastor, a scholar, a teacher. He spent much of his working ministry at Harvard Divinity School, but then went back to Sweden to become presiding bishop of the Swedish Lutheran Church. One of his academic specialties was Paul. He had a particular interest in Paul, and he refers a lot to Paul's first letter to the Corinthians, this letter that we're going to be spending a few weeks in. And in one of his books, he has a chapter which is entitled "Love Rather Than Integrity." Love rather than integrity. That may seem like an odd contrast. And he is drawing upon Paul's writings as he makes this contrast. He starts by pointing out that love is not in Paul what might be called a super virtue. There's a tendency among Christians to just sort of say love covers everything and leave it at that. Stendahl says that is not Paul's message. For Paul, love is something very particular. Love is a constant concern for the church as a community of one's brothers and sisters. Concern for the community of one's brothers and sisters. That is agape. That is love, according to Paul. Stendahl goes on, "I have entitled this particular chapter, Love Rather Than Integrity, not because I have anything against integrity, and not because the Bible considers integrity a sin." It doesn't. But the way that Stendhal is using integrity with reference to Paul's writings is to say that integrity is the issue when people with different views and different convictions and different gifts must live together. Integrity is that individual claiming of views and convictions, and integrity becomes an issue when people with different views and different convictions and different gifts must live together. This can become a problem, and Paul addresses precisely this problem when he emphasizes love in 1 Corinthians and also to a lesser degree in Romans, but particularly in 1 Corinthians. Stendhal continues interpreting Paul. The church, and remember again, the church in this sense is a community of people, a local community of people. The church is a place where people can afford to live together with different views, but that requires love. I particularly like Stendhal's choice of vocabulary here, afford. The church is a place where people can afford to live together with different views, where people are willing to pay the price that it takes to live together with different views. But to do that requires love. The gist of Paul's thought, he continues, is that integrity is of no value in and of itself and should not be put on public display. To order one's life by the conscience or the needs or the perspective of the other is the extreme example of love rather than integrity. This is all to be seen in the overarching perspective, Paul's overarching perspective, of the building up of the church community. Paul's principle, love rather than integrity, allows for, another wonderful choice of word, allows for not insisting on one's own integrity at the expense of the unity of the community. Love allows for the full respect of the integrity of the other and overcomes the divisiveness of my zeal for having it my way in the name of my own integrity. Paul's message to the early Christians in Corinth. The church is a place where people can afford to live together with different views, but that requires love. What a powerful witness in today's society. The church, a community of faith, is a place where people can afford to live together with different views, but that requires love. It means being a community of appropriate relating, a community that relates to one another with agape. Much of that happens here, I think, in this community of St. Andrew's. Don't take it for granted. Cherish it, nurture it, celebrate it, proclaim it. It means, among other things, in our ongoing life together, being present physically to one another, not just on Sunday morning, but in other ways as well. Showing care and concern, showing respect for others and listening, choosing words and actions that build up the community. It can be hard and inconvenient work, but surely it is God's vision for us. And we, as members of the faith community, can show the broader community that it can actually be done.